general information technology projects, and then we'll have another summary was prepared for us by Mark Shepard, who would not be here at this time, but it's a very complicated 16E project that is still to the part that we think we know
security management program. Unlike other business functions, such as accounting and finance, responsibility and authority should be established at the highest levels. It should be well managed and include appropriate planning and oversight. SRS, they had not yet really defined what the security management program should look like, the scope of it, the objectives, the responsibilities. They lack certain important ingredients of a security program, such as written security policies, standards, procedures, things of that nature. Also, had not yet defined their risk assessment methodologies or
Yeah, thank you. You're looking at the portfolio and project manager processes and the standards and their effectiveness in implementation. Did you also look at the governance structure sitting on top of those processes? Or was it really just more on the mechanics of the activities?
Question on the process in the statute that says that the Commissioner of Finance may not authorize the encumbrance or expenditure of an appropriation of state funds without satisfaction of these kind of milestones being hit. Did you look at that process at all? It seems a little hard for me to believe that in the absence of these things not occurring on the front end, that finance would go ahead and allow the encumbrance. Is that maybe not a Department of Finance control in place? Does that get delegated to the agency, finance departments? How are these projects even getting funded without these processes being completed?
We really need very good answers from somebody in this room.
I would
Madam Chair, I'm Gopal Gopal Khanna, CIO for the state of Minnesota. Thank you for including us in this conversation. Appreciate it very much, both the consideration IT security as well as quality oversight are indeed very important competencies and resource centers that we need to look at and constantly build upon. So any conversation and discussion about how we can do it better is always good. So I appreciate this opportunity. I have here with me two of my associates that you've met. But once again, let me send to you. To my extreme right is John Landy. He's the director of planning and portfolio management oversight. And the immediate right is Chris Ducey, the Chief Information Security Officer for the state. Both speak briefly about both these topics, and then we'd be delighted to entertain your questions. Chris, maybe you can go first.
Madam Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Christopher Bosley, and I'm the Chief Information Security Officer. First off, I'd like to start by acknowledging the audit report that was done in the Legislative Auditor's Office. I definitely, when every one of the audit reports is drafted, we go through the reports with a fine tooth comb, and actually I thought it was an excellent report, and I'd like to commend the Legislative Auditor for the work that was done. It's very good work, and I believe that it paints an accurate picture of the situation. All eight findings that are in the report, I believe that the findings themselves are definitely accurate and they're valid issues, and there's things that we definitely need to work on from the Security Committee's perspective. However, with that said, I would like to make a few comments about the recommendations in the report. The recommendations in the report, at least some of the recommendations, one of the problems that I have with the recommendations is that I don't believe that it'll ever be possible for individual entities to actually implement some of these recommendations unless there is a robust, centralized security function similar to what we're building right now in the Enterprise Security Office for agencies to fall back and rely on. And the reason why is when you look at really what constitutes a comprehensive enterprise security program, there's lots of elements. There's lots of technology that's needed. There's lots of sophistication. And if you look at one finding in the report, for example, like the finding that I'll bring to your attention is the enterprise security monitoring finding. That's the finding. In fact, most of these findings you'll find in every single technology audit report that we have. The fact that they're in every report points out that we probably have a lot broader problem than in this particular agency. It's a broader problem that we have across the enterprise. But when we look at enterprise security monitoring, and even an environment like MSRS, where they have between 300 and 350 computers in their operation, to be able to do comprehensive security monitoring on these types of environment requires sophisticated tools such as intrusion detection and prevention, security information and event management. These are tools that are very expensive. They require a lot of sophistication to run the tools. And really what it comes down to is those are the types of things, those core security utility services, that we have to figure out a way to build and provide that functionality to all agencies centrally so that these findings can actually get addressed once for all. So the finding itself is valid, but I do have an issue with the recommendation because I don't see a very high probability of agencies one-on-one actually being able to implement these recommendations because there isn't enough money in the bank for us to address these one-by-one. So those are a few comments that I had about the report itself. I also wanted to just speak to the relationship that we have with MSRS because I think even though the report is factually accurate, we definitely have a serious problem. I think there's other circumstances here that are important for people to understand. First off, when we got the enterprise security program going about 2.5 years ago, when we started setting up the the folks at MSRS, they recognized that there were some issues in this area. In fact, their assistant executive director reached out to the Office of Enterprise Technology and asked us to come in and provide them with assistance, despite the fact that they're not required to. They, as you mentioned, they're not an executive branch agency, and our statutes really give us authority and oversight over the executive branch government. So despite the fact that there wasn't a requirement, they reached out to the Office of Enterprise Technology, and we did a security assessment, not a comprehensive assessment of all aspects of their environment, but we did look at some pieces of the environment that we expected to be particularly problematic, and we made some key recommendations to the agency. First of all, we recommended that they had to have dedicated security staff, and we recommended that they go out and they hire a dedicated security officer, which they did. They took the recommendation seriously, and they actually went out and hired a dedicated security person, brought it in-house to help them address their problems. And one of the other issues that we focused on is they absolutely had to do something to get their vulnerability situation under control. As Mr. Wine from the Legislative Auditor's Office pointed out, vulnerabilities are a critical concern that we have in today's environment. The way I like to describe vulnerabilities is there's a lot of bad people out there that are the threat vectors that are trying to do bad things to our environment. What they do is they use vulnerabilities to get into our environment and to further propagate their access rights and move around new operations such as identity theft. So we need to eliminate the vulnerabilities because that's the food that these types of folks need to really get into the environment and to move around. So our core recommendation was get a security person on staff and start working on the vulnerability problem. And to the credit of the agency, they are the first organization, government organization, that is actually paid for and subscribed to our Enterprise Vulnerability Management Program. The executive branch agencies are funded through the general fund appropriation that's provided for their benefit. But the Minnesota State Retirement System actually paid for the service so that they could get the equipment installed in their environment and they could get going to address the vulnerability problem that they had. And even though the report states accurately that there's still vulnerabilities in this environment, and they're serious and need to be addressed, one thing that's also important to point out is that they went from a very, very high count of vulnerabilities to a substantially lower count of vulnerabilities in their environment. So they are making progress. And furthermore, the Minnesota State Retirement System has its own independent board of directors, and they actually present this information in a very detailed form for their board of directors so that their board of directors can actually understand the problem at hand and what the organization is doing to address the problem. So I thought that was pretty important information for people to understand. In addition to that, I think when you go through the audit without understanding the complexities of computer systems, one thing that the agency actually pointed out in its response to the report is that the vast majority of the detailed data on the pension holders that are part of the retirement system, the vast majority of that data actually resides not on the environment that was the focal point of the audit within the MSRS boundaries. The vast majority of that data is actually sitting on the mainframe computers up in the Office of Enterprise Technology. And that data that's actually housed within our borders, we do have some very rigid security controls over that data. I would consider it kind of a database of information. We also have very good access controls over that data. The environments are scanned for vulnerabilities at least weekly, and not some of the portions of our environment are scanned three times a day that we consider very critical pieces of our environment. So those are a few points that I wanted to bring to your attention about the audit. And at this point, I'd either take questions from you or turn the mic over to Mr. Lally to talk about portfolio management.
Thank you, Sam. I apologize for coming in late on the MSRS report presentation, but could you describe for me the number of employees and the number of servers and the number of desktops that actually reside at MSRS that were the scope of this report?
chair of committee members. I do not have the exact number. Based on the results that I saw and some of the work that we do with MSRS, the number fluctuates in total between 300 and 350 devices. I want to actually defer that question to MSRS for a specific breakdown. But the number has come down a little bit as they replaced a phone system. They got a lot of equipment out of their operation. But that's a specific answer. I think we have to defer to MSRS on that.
My name is Dave Birch. I'm the director of the State Retirement System. Specifically to the question, we have 88 staff. We have about 300 computer devices. All of the staff have computers on their desk as well. So servers combined is about 300.
I could see you have 88 desktops. Do you know how many servers that are actually housing applications and data?
I don't have the exact number. I believe it's about 35 servers. And then a lot of our, I don't know the total number of the phone servers. We have the same phone system the house has, and that new is kind of a computer. Madam Chair, OET has been invaluable from our standpoint. As Mr. Boosie said, if I could just back up a little bit, I will admit we had some serious weaknesses, and a lot of that is, I think, our computer system outgrew our staff. And, with that, we really kind of lost a good understanding of what our network was like. Without OET's help, we have been aggressively trying to resolve this issue for the last OET's help, and they have provided excellent value. And so I think encouraging that or providing sources for resources for that, I think we can talk to you. I just want to also reiterate that we have everything but one device behind a firewall. We actually purchased new ones. We will attack this very seriously, and we will rely on OET's help to do so.
How many IT staff do you have?
Madam Chair, Representative Downey, we have 13 total IT staff, three of them working on our network, plus we have one now new person hired about a year and a half ago, specifically for security. And I also would like to mention that this isn't an excuse, as we are two top IT people that last year and a half took with them 70 years of service, and we did our risk assessment. Passing on their knowledge was the most important thing we had to do, but we'll get an idea of our
knowledge. So what are the non-network, non-security IT staff do? Are they programmers or?
Sheriffs and other programs. We program all of our ones.
Any other general questions you can get from
also tend to look from a risk standpoint. Some agencies have all developed project management disciplines. They have all the kinds of things in place in their agency at the state level, and our interaction with them is much lighter. Because from our standpoint, they have demonstrated in the past their ability to produce and offer a high degree of quality. Other projects we get involved in at the request of the individual commissioners like us to be involved either because of
members. I think one thing in the enterprise security program that really addresses your concern is that an important thing that we're doing right now collectively with all agencies is putting in place a baseline deck of policies and a baseline deck of standards. And I think that one of the key things that we need to walk away with over the next biennium is having a clear bar. What are the minimum acceptable security requirements that everybody has to follow? The high-level policies, as well as the detailed security standards, including things like what are going to be the secure configuration standards for different products that we run there. So I believe that those baseline standards, that process we've been through now, will address the issue that you have of making sure that everybody has a bar that they're marching towards and everybody just isn't out there doing their own thing.
Well, one of the questions that comes up, and I think we started to work on it with the enterprise security system, is how much of this should be done totally central? You know, what do you have to do this totally central? Do we have to have one computer that's doing everything, or one building that's doing everything, or what? What are we losing by having everybody doing their own? You know, the duplications of that.
Madam Chair, committee members, I'll take a stab at a really difficult question. It technically would be possible to take our environment that we have today that has 38 different data centers with a history of running every product everywhere. It technically would be possible to throw enough money on the table to provide that kind of security for the environment that we have today. But I think the numbers would be shocking, and it's something we clearly want to do. So that's why I think it's so important from our security perspective to figure out what are those things that need to be done that we can actually do centrally, where we can all share resources and actually save the taxpayers money. So that's one important thing that we're trying to do with the Enterprise Security Program is really figure out what are the utility services and what are those things then that have to be done at the agency level when they're closest to the business. But on the converse side of the question, this year, the Office of Enterprise Technology actually was the governor's initiative for consolidation. We clearly could make our environment a lot easier if we actually went forward and looked at things like data center consolidation. When we talk about the cost of running products like our enterprise vulnerability management system, because we have so many data centers and so many environments, in order to deploy a system like that, which is absolutely crucial in today's environment, we're buying hundreds of security appliances, which cost thousands and thousands of dollars a piece because we have so many environments and we need to place those sensors. If we put the environments together, we can do technology. We can make the environment more secure, and we can actually save money in the process for the security solutions. So the security can be done, but it certainly can be done easier and cheaper if we start looking for ways to make things simpler.
Madam Chair, I apologize. We were huddling quickly to make sure we were looking at the right properly. My name is Abigail Reed. I'm a budget officer at Minnesota Management and Budget. And I'm the budget officer that covers...
You did officially do it.
to cover the areas of I cover the area of technology for the budget division.
Okay.
And to answer your question, Representative Downey, specifically, we do not have any formal process. Honestly, our deputy commissioner, we weren't as familiar with the statute as we probably should be. We don't have a formal process, but we definitely do work closely with our community to agree with the goal. We don't want agencies setting up appropriations and encumbrances for certainly agree with that goal and work with them closely. And I can think of a few examples where OET has issues. So that does happen on an informal basis. But we do work most closely with them is when we're actually getting the budget cycle with new appropriation requests. So when an agency has an option that they're taking around, they definitely work with us, and then OET shares their analysis with us. Additional readiness of the project, as we're also looking at the business and the financial aspects.
It seems to me that that language and statute gives an administration all the authority that they would need to fully fund all of the requirements that we have put on OET. I mean, the message I guess I'm getting is that we have an unrealistic expectation of what should be happening based on resources provided, and that OET is engaged in more of a triage effort to figure out what are the most pressing responsibilities they have to deal with first, and basically putting aside those others that they can't get to. And I think Mr. Lally testified to something very close to that in this past session. So to the extent that there's a resource issue, it seems to me that 16E.0465 subdivision D, Part B, subdivision 2, gives as much authority as you would need, because any project that wouldn't meet that threshold of being able to accomplish the goals with the funds appropriated would be additional funds available to be used for OET. So in other words, you could require them to self-fund this certification process, this review process, if there was a desire to do so. So you may have to create fewer technology projects in the biennium to do it. But I think the law would require that, as it's written. It would require finance to decide which ones you think to fund it based on whether there was an ability to review them pursuant to that part of statute. It seems like that's a requirement in the statute. It's a shared one.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, for moving to kind of the conversational part of it. Chime in on Representative Winkler's comments, and it would appear to me that the thresholds for the size of projects that we're talking about, $1 million, $5 million, and $10 million, to the extent that there's a statutorily imposed kind of OET overhead burden required for the project, I don't know what that would be on a $10 million project, but I imagine it's a very, very small fraction of a percent to have complied with what essentially are good portfolio management, project initiation, and startup activities. I can't imagine that a $10 million project wouldn't have just by itself produced the level of documentation that OET would be looking for. So I appreciate resource constraints on all fronts, both the security and the project oversight fronts, but I don't think it's quite that easy. It seems to me that there are solutions in all of these cases where just a commitment to compliance and adherence to the law is possible within the existing resource constraints, at least on the outside looking in. So it's probably a longer discussion, and it's good we got 6 months to do it. But, if MSRS has 13 IT professionals to support 88 users, that's a pretty healthy ratio. I appreciate you got programming tasks, but basic commitment to IT security. I got a few servers in my house and some fired
underdog guy from Circuit City came out and set up my firewall and my 64-bit encryption, maybe you guys could probably intrude and steal my spreadsheets possibly, but I just don't know that that's such an unreasonable expectation for small agencies that even in their current configuration, EBSA participating in a huge OET data center, that's just a basic commitment to it within the existing resources wouldn't be possible.
Madam Chair, Representative Downey, to be fair to OET on the $10 million overhead issue, to be fair to them, one of the findings of the OLA report, of course, is that they don't have a formal process for approving a monitoring project, so a lot to ask. I'm saying that a little bit sarcastically because I think that you're right on, that UC's words, I think, the simple stuff. I've only served on this committee for less than a year, but my training's in architecture and I look at systems stuff all the time, and too often I think we look at the very complex solutions rather than the real straightforward. Have some basic descriptions, some basic accountability, basic description policy or monitoring policies. I think on that same level, one of the things, I guess I have a question for Mr. Ducey. I think that, Ms. Reed, don't go too far. because this gets, I think, to the whole culture question that we dealt with during session on the internal audit positions. If I just, Mr. Ducey, you can tell me if I have this timing right. I believe that OET started engaging with MSRS in June of 07.
Chair, committee members, that is actually true.
The fifth finding on the MSRS audit is about the account and password controls. And looking at the level of sharing of passwords and the accessible passwords, I mean, most of vulnerability, on my understanding on the IT side, comes initially because of human error. And there's obviously some very complex and sophisticated attacks out there, but in terms of sharing of data, stealing of laptops, that kind of thing, so people in our cars or leave things unprotected. Just how does this become an issue such that 2 years after the, or 20 months after OET has been involved with MSRS, that there isn't just a basic etiquette among the IT staff over there that you just train the ADA users that you're not to share passwords and you need to change them and you need to update them?
Madam Chair, committee members, addressing the timing lag, I know we came in June 2007. I believe we spent probably 4 weeks on and off doing some work. One of the first recommendations that we had was actually to get some security people in the door. So I know a part of the lag is that they actually had to hire some security people. Now, obviously, some of the really simple stuff like passwords and those kind of things, we probably could have got taken care of faster. But part of the question I think would probably be more appropriate to address to MSRS itself, recognizing with our relationship with MSRS, we don't have that direct oversight authority to come in and say, well, here's how things are going to run. That's not exactly like a retirement system. We're there to provide them as much help as we can, as much advice as we can. So I would prefer, if it's acceptable to you, to address the question to the agency itself.
Well, I guess, Madam Chair, I think my question goes more towards the point that we hear that I've heard from OET. I believe in infrastructure. I believe the digital infrastructure is as key as our physical infrastructure. And it has to be kept up, and we have to continue to be, that we're going to, at best, stay afloat and hopefully stay slightly ahead of the threats, and both the threats from attack.
guess I'm just a little bit concerned that for 2 years it's been a relationship, MSRS, and we're not going to have a strong account and password control system until June, until years from now. So that's one concern that I have, just that we're making things more complex rather than dealing with the softer, easier things that are really about cultural changes, which goes to my question to Ms. Reed, that the work that Representative Lincoln, Representative Downey did, and the governor's budget proposed on the internal auditors rehiring at MME, have those positions been, including follow-ups on OLA reports, you know, those positions have been seen.
We're in the process of doing as we started,
assertive here just to make a point that I think that we really are, we've become so focused on writing the big checks and, you know, as a legislature and on putting the money on the table, and some of it really is the enterprising nature of our state employees and sometimes being hamstrung from the top and being focused on new projects rather than let's do the stuff that we know how to do immediately, the sort of triage piece from a human side rather than from the capital side.
Together the internal controls that we're doing. That's very much what we're trying to do as the Ukraine boss. We started to do monthly, perhaps it'll be more frequent than monthly, but following that follow and the contingent pieces. Here's a small topic. Take a look at this, make sure you get this one. Simple things that can
And just to make sure that I clarify one key point, is that we definitely are trying to address the things that don't cost any money, which are the things that do cost money. And that's a lot of what the work we've been doing, setting policies and standards. So that the simple things of how do people behave, those are things that don't cost money, that when we get clarity on those issues, through the policy process, the standard process, I think that's really important for us to do as well. And along with that, we've had a massive training effort over the last 2 years as we're getting our program just to make sure that people understand what the threats are and what are the things we're doing today to address those threats. So you make an excellent point.
Investment in training, developing people to understand those, giving them the tools they need to
process here between the executive branch and the legislature as we go through this interim evaluation and think about legislation next time. But at the same time, I don't think the stipulations in statute right now are, and these are not Six Sigma processes. These are just basic fundamental, you know, controls on expenditures. And and we could have done a lot with the $8.5 million that, you know, we flushed on the health match project, right? And, you know, I don't know whether these controls would have caught those things or not, and mitigated the loss of state funds there. But this stuff isn't rocket science. Some of it is just flat out compliance and just a basic fundamental thought process, I mean, irrespective of the fact that it's required by law. So we're going to think about changing the statutes. You know, I don't know, I read 16E, and but it doesn't seem that bad to me. There's maybe one area where I do think we need to think about it quite a bit, and that's in the area of governance. I thought this was maybe the root cause of some of the concerns, maybe the cracks that we had on internal audit, too. You know, it's really difficult when you got a big state agency that has a budget and federal funds coming through, that owns those business processes, that has to serve those customers with those systems. You know, who really has the authority and the responsibility and the accountability? And until you get those decision-making roles lined up and agreed to at the highest levels of you know, the commissioners of the agencies, and you build some governance processes that allow you to actually make decisions about who's going to control those gates and those funds and those projects. And we can put all we want in the statute, and you guys can build Six Sigma controlled processes down to the nth degree. But absent resolving that governance question, you just don't have these kinds of questions and problems. It's true on the audit side, on the internal control side. It's true on the security side. It's true on the large project authorization and management side. All these things require some governance restructuring. Perhaps that's an area where the legislature might be able to help again, where I'd just have to dive in and tell the executive branch how to do everything as compared to the fact that it needs to be done. But maybe that's the place where we can beef up 16E a bit.
One of the things that I've got when this
point well taken.
Multiple more cases than have before. But I think the question which has come up again, and I don't think that when we look at this part, starting with every background question that we focused on, that this very specific language in it about what's supposed to be done obviously hasn't been followed. Now, what's the risk that we do? We put the mechanisms in place to follow it, or we wimp out the language? Anyone suggesting that it would be a good idea to wimp out, you know, to write the language the way you've kind of been treating it? Authorize it if we see it, or authorize it if somebody tells us about it, to the extent back to something like that. So what?
Madam Chair, I mean, we'd be happy to work with you on the language. I think, as Ms. Reed said, certainly the direction in terms of MMB needing to work together on that is anybody disagrees with that. You know, there's specifics of what that means. We have a process on the capital budget side that's sort of, in principle, I think the same thing, where we have an internal check so that before appropriation is set up, internal capital budget people confirm that any requirements of match or other things have been met, and so the appropriation isn't even set up until we've done that internal check. And it seems to me that you're looking, and the intent of the language is a very parallel kind of process. Certainly could work with OET to set up. And I think on the other hand, we also want to be sure that we're not getting in the way of the work that agencies need to move forward with, assuming that they've done the appropriate checks with OET. And so I think it's a balance, because as Representative Kalin was saying, you know, we don't want to slow things down any more than we need to, but we do have to have some checks in place, and clearly we need to
move forward. $5 million that we lost on Health Match, which were the federal funds. It's the issue of the appropriation of federal funds. We are required to appropriate federal funds, but when we have this blanket appropriation, that kind of goes away. So how do we take care of that on these large projects? I mean, I'm not sure that would have stopped it, but it sure would have been ISIS that had just gone forward with nobody looking at it.
Madam Chair, actually, under the statute, it doesn't matter where the money comes from. The requirement is the same. The reporting is the same. The amount spent in the accounts, not the source of the funds. We have a situation, I mean, the auditor's report recommends that OET establish a standard to support agencies in implementing and complying with its project portfolio management policy. In other words, the suggestion is that you make it easier and more straightforward for agencies to report on these projects. But that doesn't absolve the agency of the requirement of following the law. And I guess I don't know, I think of OET is sort of like the UN. You know, the only thing you can really do is kind of walk around hat in hand to the member nations and sort of say, you know, we're kind of central, but you have all the power and all the money. So how do I apply those statutes? Right, but if you don't have somebody else in the administration who's going to demand that you demand compliance, it is right. If the Security Council is not going to do anything about it, it doesn't matter what the law says. If there isn't enough initiative within the administration to back OET up in following through on these requirements, I can see that. I mean, you talked about sorting out governance. I think it's more about forcing big agencies to do what they don't really think they should have to bother thinking about doing. It's more a question of getting them to comply with their requirements rather than just operating in their own kingdom. And I don't know how the legislature does that except continuing to ask questions. Well, your idea, I think, earlier was, a year ago, was that any technology request has to come through a technology committee. That there be a finance committee actually have to see every single technology request, so that every agency that has to come in and submit the same sets of questions about whether they're complying with OET or not, that we would have that kind of check on spending money, because, you know, I doubt that Health and Human Services, and I doubt that workforce development, higher ed, is really going to develop the kind of attention to these projects on the front end that is hearing this.
Representative Winkler, I think that, you know, clearly the statute is the statute, and again, we'll look at that. I think that the harder question, though, we'll take a look at it. It's a good guideline to follow. I think that the harder question really is, though. Okay, let's take that back. I think that the harder question, though, is what do you do after that first step? Because you're right, that entry point is something that we need to look at. On the other hand, help match other systems. That ongoing monitoring is what OET is continuing to look at, as Mr. Lally talks about that loop. After that first commencing of the project through MAPS as an example, along to your project, what involvement do we have? And I think that's the ongoing conversation that we have to have about what kind of support and assistance and oversight does OET have, does MND have for projects, not just that front point, because that's one thing, but that's over fairly quickly and isn't the end of the story.
Very much a messenger for this roundtable conversation. It's a very important subject because as a nation, as a state, as a government, we have serious threats. Security just cannot overlook real. And the recent study that was done shows that it's not just a federal problem, it's a government problem, it's not a public sector problem. The challenge that we have before us is that we in government, and especially in Minnesota, we got up this computer on December 12, 1952. That was 47 years ago, and since then, technology has ever simply a device to do the payroll tasks faster and better. But today, mission technology solutions underpin all the aspects of government's operations, all the aspects of our country's operations, private and public. Your business, everything. And we are highly vulnerable. The nation states and rogue entities that are systems every day. it's a daunting task, a challenge before us. We've got to manage assets across the executive branch, optimize it while we define the architectural framework and move forward into a new environment. And both the things, and the third piece is technology. So the package of the past will not work. We just have to collaborate and be genius about it and a bigger perspective. So certainly, I mean, enterprise lots to bring about collaborative. Just they need to be continued. Working on them, get together with you to identify some alternate funding mechanisms was the right thing to do. That because general fund won't suffice. 50 years ago, we had to find a new way of funding the buildings because that were buildings were required to house government workers to support the government delivery of services. Likewise, we have to envision a new way of funding our technology platforms that will provide deliver the government service in the future. It's a bigger company. So the sound table discussion is very good because it gives us an opportunity in the next few months, as Lowry said, we have an opportunity to discuss and make sure that we continue building on our services. And I think we've done a lot, and I think so you've asked us to do a lot of very interesting things in the next 6 months. We're here and we will be working on them. I think they'll all position us for a better environment. So what we've been doing is manage our IT assets, define the future, and do the solution piece. So I'm grateful. I'm really grateful for all the support received from all of you, governor and the governor's leadership, and I really appreciate it. So I think that's the word of wisdom.
And I do appreciate this hearing. I just wanted to pick up on a few pieces. There was a point that was made about a concern with privacy and security, and I think that's, and we've talked some about that, and Senator Downey talked about this really ultimately being an issue of governance. And I think with governance comes the piece over here about enforcement. You know, we all want to be nice and collaborative, but sometimes these issues really come down to, are we going to follow the law? And is somebody going to make us follow the rules? We don't do it voluntarily. And that's sometimes what we really have to face with IT security. The point I want to leave you with as you go forward to put together maybe a rewrite or a report on how we fund and get better security in state government is don't forget about those many, many small entities out there. With one or two or three people, but they too, as Representative Mason said, that's still state government too. And we said that to you last legislative session about one of the smallest entities in state government, that is Sports Commission, which went out and set up a website without any involvement of OET or state government at all and had a completely corrupted website. That had not public data on it, very vulnerable in access. So my point is, as you go forward, yes, there are a lot of issues about whether or not the Department of Human Services should have gone forward with Health Match, but also consider, should we allow all of the various boards and commissions, including the Combative Sports Commission, to be out there in the name of state government with a completely insecure website? So ultimately, it is going to come to what Mr. Boozy said, that we need to set some minimum standards for people to operate within the enterprise of state government, but then we need to enforce them. We need to say to some people, somebody in state government, and I would say it should be OET, should be able to say, you didn't have the resources, or you didn't have the priority, or you didn't have whatever, make the system secure. And so you are, in fact, going to shut them down and live with the consequences. You don't seem to be willing to do that very well. But that's sometimes what it comes to, and then you get the message that things do matter. The law, security, do matter. And the only way sometimes you can do that is to enforce through a governance structure that says to people,
have a meeting and Mr. Lally appears, he always reminds us that he's very close to retirement or has retired or something like that. And so we certainly want, first of all, he hasn't read the little section we tucked into law that forbade him from retiring until all these problems are cleaned up. But at any rate, we certainly want to, if this is the last meeting you'll be at, which I don't believe, but we'll take this opportunity to thank you for your years of dedicated service and help and kind explanations to those of us who may be very slow on the uptake. So. What happened to him? What did he